In the first few weeks, using a time-honored, sophisticated technique of neurophysiologists, they squished the axons to squeeze out the axoplasmic goop inside. They didn't find many of the atom-huge sodium ions there, which was intriguing, since there are plenty of sodium ions in seawater and in blood. Sodium, after all, is just part of ordinary salt, sodium chloride. The salty taste of seawater or blood, be it squid blood or human blood, is a sign of those ions in operation. Something inside the membrane of the squid's axon was taking sodium ions, those huge modified atoms, and grabbing onto them and pushing them right through the membrane so they built up on the outside of the nerve. This was great. This was seeing details that the German researchers of the 1860s had only guessed at. The squid was stockpiling sodium ions outside the membrane of its nerve cells. But why? The two young men had a hunch. They'd studied physiology at Cambridge with the world's experts, but before they could go any further, the war came. Hodgkin worked on radar, Huxley with the Admiralty, and it wasn't until 1947 that they could get back to full-time research. Hodgkin's new wife, Marnie, wrote to her parents, "Alan is like a dolphin that has suddenly been released. He plunges and gambles and cavorts in pure research after so long." It was frustrating to have stopped, but the years in radar hadn't been wasted. Hodgkin and his wartime colleagues had repeatedly used the old insight that it's easy for electric currents to travel along a smooth, wide path. There are usually plenty of available electrons in such a big path, and so there's not much resistance in the way. Narrow paths, however, are harder for electric currents to continue along. The electric current faces more resistance. Since most nerves are very narrow, notwithstanding the relatively enormous nerve of a squid, they offer immense resistance to any electricity trying to squeeze through. This means, as Hodgkin explained a little later, if an electrical engineer were to look at the nervous system, he would see that signaling electrical information along narrow nerve fibers is a formidable problem. The nerve fiber is so small that the electrical resistance of a meter's length of small nerve fiber is about the same as that of 10 billion miles of thicker copper wire, the distance being roughly 10 times that between the Earth and the planet Saturn. An electrical engineer would find himself in great difficulties if he were asked to wire up the solar system using ordinary cables. Nerves have to work differently. They can't pour their electricity straight down the middle of their axons, as Alexander Bell had imagined electric sparks rolling down a copper wire in his telephone. Instead, nerves have somehow to be powered up from the side, getting regular boosts from something very strong and stable waiting here. It would be as if an engineer knew he or she was going to have problems keeping a signal going in a long wire, and so thoughtfully installed, a few trillion booster units at regular intervals along the edge. That's what the huge sodium ions were doing. They were there to keep a nerve signal going. Further research showed that potassium ions are also essential to nerve conduction, but since their operation is similar, the text will stick to sodium for clarity. When we have a thought and a nerve cell in our brain begins to fire, the signal will die out in a fraction of a millimeter unless some of this charged-up sodium squeezes back in from outside to keep it powered along. What Hodgkin and Huxley made clear, and what earned them a Nobel Prize, was that the cell membrane isn't a continuous rubbery barrier, impermeable and secretive, keeping our thoughts locked in coy, Freudian depths. Rather, it has lots of little gaps that widen to let the sodium ions go through. Not a lot has to pour across, just a few thousand sodium ions along any millimeter of the nerve, but that's enough. Anything that lets the sodium boosters in will start a signal. In an eye peering at a computer monitor, for example, the incoming electric waves from the screen hit ingeniously shaped molecules known as rhodopsin, which exist on the retina. Imagine the rhodopsin molecules as palm trees. The molecules twist like palm fronds in a typhoon when the light hits, and a part of the rhodopsin, its roots, pull upward. Since the rhodopsin trees stand in a slurry of sodium ions, gaps open at the base of each one as the trees lift up. The sodium pours through those new gaps into the nerve beneath, and the signal begins. That first jolt of sodium, entering the very start of the nerve, makes the next millimeter of nerve membrane do something strange. It warps and bubbles and contorts, and then suddenly, holes start opening up there, letting more sodium that's been waiting farther along on the outside pour in. When that booster sodium arrives, the next section of the nerve has the strength to bubble with opening holes. Sodium that's been stored on the outside even farther along pours in, and the sequence repeats, rippling quickly along the full length of the nerve. After the hole signal has traveled along, the nerve is a bedraggled mess, pierced with holes and sloshing with sodium. Before it can fire again, it has to rebuild itself, which means bailing out the extra sodium that poured inside and closing up the holes. That's so energy-consuming, as is keeping the electrified sodium on the outside and not letting it dribble in while waiting for another signal, that 80% of the energy that goes to our brain, all the sugar and oxygen, all the nutritious residue of steaks and muesli and frosted flakes and junior mints, is devoted simply to fixing the sodium hole damage.